Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday the 30th, the penultimate day of July, Anno Domini 2022, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, get off your shoes. Don't get the blues.
To make it June 61st?
Exactly. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Oh, this is, here we go. Please note that the news item I'm about to read is not a repeat of last week's, or the weeks before, or the month before.
There's a
How about the decades? Probably the decades?
Yeah. Microsoft is warning customers that the Windows update released, all the Windows updates released since June 28th, will trigger printing issues on devices connected using USB.
Hello.
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 It's a conspiracy.
Hello. Hello.
In this
Hello.
Case, goodbye.
It's a conspiracy with the forest people to stop using paper.
Exactly.
Which are fighting with the printer people to keep using ink.
Right. Affected platforms include both clients, Windows 10 version 20H2, 21H1, and 21H2, and server, Windows Server version 20H2. Symptoms include applications referring to the printer using a specific name not being able to print, and Windows showing duplicate copies of installed printers with similar names in the suffix copy 1. Microsoft also asks users experiencing these or similar printing-related issues on systems with USB-connected printers to file a report via the feedback hub under Problem Devices and Drivers Print category by choosing Make New Bug under the Find Similar Feedback section. The easiest fix for Microsoft, and I hope you're sitting down, is to uninstall the printer and then reinstall it. This is the printer equivalent of turning it off and on again. Last week, Microsoft also warned that printing might break on printers and scanners using smart card or PIV authentication. This is because temporary mitigation provided 1 year ago to address Windows Server printing issues on non-compliant devices will be removed, potentially breaking printing starting with this week's optional preview update. Now, please note that this is specifically for USB-attached printers. If you're connected in some other way, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or whatever, this likely is not having any impact on you. This is strictly for USB printers. At any rate, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 USB printing breaks due to recent updates. Your choices are, so what else is new? Yes, I know, thanks. Hasn't hit me yet. Who prints anymore? Windows. And, of course, other. So far, we have 29 votes in the poll with Windows first, followed by what else is new and hasn't hit me yet. And two people say, who prints anymore? One person said, yeah, I know. Thanks. Clearly, they've been hit. At any rate, if you select other or if you have more to say, head on over to our website. It's soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. The second forum down is the poll discussion, currently at least. The number one item under poll discussion is 30 July 22, Windows 10 USB printing breaks due to recent updates. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Well, why should we be surprised? Because, I mean, let's face it. Microsoft, for a few years now, uses their whole audience, which are millions of people, to beta test.
That's exactly right.
I mean, everybody out there, they just, you know, throw an update out there, and it's like throwing spaghetti on the wall and see if it sticks.
That's right. And if it doesn't, in this case, you know it's done. They send it out.
Yeah.
It's look, I get it. There are an awful lot of printers, and they connect in multiple ways, and Microsoft doesn't control the drivers, and yada, yada, yada. On the other hand, Microsoft is a multi-trillion-dollar company. They can afford to hire QA people. You would think they would be able to figure out how to do that.
The guy that handles printing retired.
That's about right. Well, don't forget, Microsoft doesn't have a QA department anymore.
Mm-mm.
What they have is they have a, as far as I can tell, a single image running on a virtual server somewhere, and they test everything against that. There's no way you're going to hook a USB printer to a virtual system, so they're not testing it. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's annoying me. Not really, because I don't run Windows anymore, so I don't actually care. It's okay by me.
Well, that's the beauty of, you know, running, like we were talking before the show, you know, running Ubuntu.
That's right.
You know, I mean, it works. And again, I went to turn my machine on, and it says, oh, wait a minute, there's some updates that were done. You got to, we're going to restart. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, knock yourself out.
You know, because I had it, I don't turn my machines off. I just have the monitors
right.
Turn those off. And it, like I say, it just, oh, yeah, we need to it's not like it takes a super long time for Ubuntu to, you know, right. Reboot.
On this machine, because it has an SSD card, it takes essentially the same 8 seconds that my Chromebook takes.
Yeah.
It's that fast.
Yeah.
And Ubuntu doesn't need to restart unless they're updating the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most of the time it says, click here to update some stuff, and it runs in the background, and you don't even know what happened.
Or it does the updates. Yeah,
or it does it in the background without you even having to click anything,
mm-hmm.
depending on how you got it set up. So, yeah. It's kind of...
easy.
Miraculous, I was going to say, because when you talk to people who have only ever run Windows, they're shocked. They're shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of amuses me to see them. And the same thing with Chromebooks. How do I update it? You don't. Well, do you turn it off every night? Yes. Then you don't have to do anything, ever. I have that exact same shirt. I have that exact... Is that my shirt?
It was in your closet.
It was in my closet. Somebody had to be. I'm not anymore. Anyway, the idea here is that there isn't...
You left the closet long ago.
There isn't any issues with updating a Chromebook or any Linux, most Linux systems. Whereas Macs, I don't think there's a problem, but you do have to go do it manually, yes?
You can have it check automatically and then tell you there's an update.
And you can decide. And that's okay. Yeah. That's okay. But with Windows, it's horribly disruptive. But we have to change this one file for your printing. You'll have to reboot.
But that's where...
What? And you have to reboot now because we don't want to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine.
But, you know, that's one other thing that, you know, a lot of these folks, you know, have called in and they've got an older machine. Well, if you've got a current machine that's running fine, that's all well and good. But to look further down the road, because it is going to happen... Windows is you're going to want to get away from Windows as fast as you can. So to do your homework now, if you've got an older machine, and I'm just saying, you know, not some Windows 95 or Windows 3.1 machine, you know,
right.
But say one that you just retired, put Xubuntu on it and start learning that. It's not that hard, and you'd be surprised. It looks a lot like Windows. And it's got all the programs in there that you'd want to do.
That's right.
Anything from listening to music, photo editing, it's there.
I haven't used Windows for much of anything, really, in 25 years, and I've never missed it. Not one single thing have I missed. Now, we're going to get calls from angry people who run Photoshop. Okay, fine. If you have some specialized program that only runs in Windows, good for you. Mm-hmm. But for 99.9999999% of everybody, they could. You can, you know, nowadays you can run Chrome OS Flex on an old machine. Hey, speaking of which, is it September? September? I think I'm September.
Yeah.
On the September CIDR meeting, they're going to have a very special guest who will be talking about Chrome OS Flex.
Gee, who might that be?
I'm sure I don't know.
Not me. It's not Steve.
No, it's not you. It's not Steve. I wonder who's left. I don't know.
Amelia.
It could be Amelia. It could be Amelia, actually. But
yeah, I was going to say, she is taught well.
Yeah, there's hundreds of old machines that are certified to run Chrome OS. Chrome OS Flex is basically the same operating system as on Chromebooks. It's a Linux-based Chrome OS, basically. And, well, that's redundant. Chrome OS is Linux-based. Anyway, the point here is there's about 400 machines that are certified to run it, to mostly fully. Some don't do Bluetooth or whatever. And I put it on a machine that's absolutely not certified, and everything runs just fine, thank you very much. I was thinking of actually using that in September.
Yeah.
Except it's only got a half a meg camera.
Yeah.
But so we'll see. But I do want to do it from, we'll see what machine you give me. Maybe I'll hang on to it through that meeting and we'll see.
I don't think it's that old.
Yeah, good. Then if it'll work, it'll work.
So
if you've got an old machine sitting around and you're just looking for a Chromebook, Chrome OS Flex is free. It installs very easily. Log in with a Gmail ID and password, and you're in. You're done. It's done. And it updates the same as a Chromebook, and it does everything a Chromebook does. Obviously, you know, it may not have the battery life if it's an old enough laptop. That's not a problem. That's not Chrome OS Flex's fault. That's hardware.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But you're getting to use an old machine that otherwise would have probably been tossed out or thrown in the closet and forgotten about.
Yeah, no, and pay attention to the specs. I will admit that I put Chrome OS Flex on a friend's old machine and spent half an hour trying to get the Bluetooth to work before I finally took a look at the specs and saw there's no Bluetooth.
Oops.
I'm an idiot.
Pre-Bluetooth.
Check those things out.
Yeah. We had a customer bring a computer in last week because it was running slow. And then we see the Vista sticker on it.
Yeah.
He had Windows 10. It's 13 years old.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a quad i7. It's a 13-year-old quad i7. But it's got 6 gigs of RAM. Only 6 gigs of RAM?
Exactly.
So,
now, again, that's
great
more than
machine
adequate
for Ubuntu.
Yeah.
For Ubuntu or for Chrome OS Flex.
Yeah.
Not for Windows.
Mm-mm. Well, that's why I say everybody's got to start thinking ahead, because the only direction Microsoft is going is keep raising the bar requirements for their systems. Windows 11, even 12, I've heard tell Windows 12 right now is going to be raising the bar a little bit more.
Of course it is.
On what it's going to need as far as resources.
Of course it is. Microsoft has two philosophies. You don't have enough RAM. You don't have a fast enough machine.
Yep.
That's their philosophy.
Apple's next OS, Ventura, raises the bar from 2015 to 2017 max.
Right. And you know, Apple does the same thing.
Yep.
They abandon old machines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can, by the way, if you've got I know this is blasphemy, if you've got an old enough Mac, you can put Chrome OS Flex on that. It's got to be an Intel Mac. So if it's a G5 Mac, no. It's a PowerPC, man.
There was a PowerPC Linux.
There was, and I don't know that anybody's updated it in decades. Honestly, I don't know. I haven't really checked. But if you've got an Intel machine, you can put Xubuntu on, or any Ubuntu, any Linux on it. Oh. And you can put Chrome OS Flex on it. And if you've been looking at the possibility of a Chromebook and you've got an old laptop, why not play with it? I mean, there's no reason not to.
Start getting yourself prepared before you get totally fed up with Windows or it bricks your machine. Because, again, I got a feeling that it's, some of these updates, it's not a matter if, it's just when. It's going to hit something and brick thousands of machines.
Yeah. What you have to remember is that every time you boot up Windows, you should hear tick, 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 tick. Because there's a time bomb somewhere waiting to go off.
It's usually your hard drive making that noise.
It could be your hard drive. Since nobody runs zip drives anymore, it's got to be your hard drive.
We had a guy bring in an old G4 that he needed fixed because it still had a zip drive in it, and he's got hundreds of zip disks.
I have some
zip copy them onto something newer before this dies completely. We were able to fix it, but
copy them off.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of my programs that I use for logging and all that. They finally came out with an update that he was using SQL Server, SQL database for saving. But now he allowed for cloud storage.
Oh, nice.
So first thing I did was go around to all three of my machines and pointed it up to my Google Drive. And now all three just go right on up to there. I don't have to worry about the database getting messed up, mucked up, or slowing down because one's updating the cloud. It's just automatically, it's fast. I can even use it remotely.
Yep.
And that's what I'm liking even more, because if I'm happen to be somewhere else at an off-site and I want to log into it, no problem. I can tie right in because it's tied into my Google account.
As long as you have internet. And that's the thing. Internet has swiftly become and is now a necessity for so many people. It's no longer a luxury. It's no longer something you'd like to have. Students take class, particularly since the pandemic.
Yeah.
Students take classes online. People do their work online.
There were stories about families needing to camp outside a coffee shop or bookstore to get on their internet so the kids could go to school.
I had a friend who was visiting one time, and so I gave him access to my guest network. And then about a month later, my wife said, "Who's in our driveway?" And I look out, and there's his van. He said, "I was going to come and see you, but I have to finish this first." Yeah, okay.
A creepy guy in a van? Handing out candy?
Yeah, exactly. Fine. But you need internet now. It's gotten well past the point where it's a luxury for most people. In fact, there's going to be an update soon for Chromebooks. Did I talk about that this week? That one of my stories?
Mm-hmm.
No.
I didn't think I saw
no,
one.
And no. Chromebooks will be able to be hotspots for LTE, so for data, for cellular data.
Okay.
So if you have a Chromebook with a cellular, where you can put the chip in,
yep.
You can use that as a hotspot for other people. So that's kind of nice.
I just
let people use their phone for that already.
Yeah, I just turn my phone on and I can sit there because they were wondering at work. I had a tablet sitting in the break room, and I'm surfing the internet. How'd you get in there? It's off my phone.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on the carrier whether they charge you extra for that, though. So check your carrier first.
Check your carrier.
Yeah, because I've got my plan, just everything.
Yeah, I have an unlimited plan.
Even though there's a couple of them unlimited on your phone, doesn't mean unlimited hotspotting. You have to pay extra for a hotspot.
I know, and I checked that.
Same here. That'd be the first thing I go after if I saw the bill go up, because all of a sudden it's like, no.
So we're well past the point where you have to put up with Windows. Like I said, if you're running a specialized program of some sort then yeah, absolutely. But I'll guarantee you 90% of people do everything they do is on the web. You know, they don't need anything more than a Chromebook.
Yeah.
So it, whether you're using Windows or a Mac or Linux or a Chromebook, you can do everything you want to do exactly the way you used to do it without any really notice that you've changed anything. Now, I have been using Ubuntu for 25, almost 30 years, really. And so I've written a lot of stuff at the operating system level to do a bunch of my back-end work for me. So, you know, I couldn't run anything but Ubuntu at this point. Well, anything but Linux at this point. But that's because I've done all that stuff. If I were an average user, that stuff wouldn't be a problem.
And the big thing with a lot of people is they hate change, of course. So that's why they're still on Windows 7 or Windows XP before that. And so you've made the change to Windows 10. You've learned how Windows 10 works, so you can do that. It's pretty close to the last OSs. Your Microsoft Office doesn't work anymore, and you got to upgrade to the new Microsoft Office. It's going to be a little different. You're going to have to learn a couple different things. Might as well jump over to something free. The OS is free. The apps are free. It works even better.
Exactly right. Exactly right. All right. We should get his question in anyway. Our first caller is Brian from somewhere in the wilds of Tennessee. Hi, Brian. How's it going down there?
Well, it's hot.
Well, yeah. I'll
tell you that. This is Gallatin, Tennessee, about 30 miles north of Nashville.
Oh, very exciting.
So I'm sitting in my hotel room talking with you on the phone and watching you on the tube on my
nice.
So you're saying that civilization has come to Tennessee.
Is that in the internet? It's amazing.
There you go. What's up?
Not much. I'm watching you on Gmail and my laptop.
Yeah.
Running Linux.
There you go.
I'm talking to you on my phone. Running Android.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the internet is everywhere.
The internet is everywhere, as long as you're willing to pay for it.
That's true.
All right, listen, do you have a question?
No, I'm just having a good time.
All right. Well, have fun down there in Tennessee. Stay cool. We'll talk to you when you get back. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on The Great. And truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And here comes another exciting news item about Windows. Just when you thought it was safe to go back into Windows.
No.
Microsoft has admitted that its last patch Tuesday and the update previews broke the start menu for some Windows 11 users. So if you have Windows 10, you can't print. If you have Windows 11, you can't start. Perfect. And issued a known issue rollback to solve the problem, which is fairly rare. The absence of the operating system start menu was inconvenient for affected users who complained of it when the security patch landed at the beginning of the month. Microsoft admitted the issue was present in the release notes for the update, which is KB5015814, which was downloaded automatically as part of the company's usual updates on 12 July, as well as in a preview issued in June, which introduced search highlights and, it seems, a non-functioning start menu for some users, at least. The complication is also present in Microsoft's latest update preview, released on July 21. That preview added the ability for new users to update to a newer version of Windows 11 on startup, because the one time you most want to not be able to use your machine for 2 hours is when you start it.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that the June update preview also contained a fix for Wi-Fi hotspots that were broken in the previous raft of patches. Not that you can get to them anymore because you can't use the start menu, but they fixed that. It is heartening to see Microsoft continue its rich tradition of fixing one thing and breaking another. As for the problems this time around, Microsoft added this comment to the known issues list.
After installing this update, we have received reports that a small number of devices might be unable to open the start menu. On affected devices, clicking or selecting the start button or using the Windows key on your keyboard might have no effect.
Fortunately for users concerned about the prospect of rolling back the security fixes in the release, the issue has been resolved using known issue rollback, or as Microsoft prefers to call it, KIR, known issue rollback. K-I-R.
Should be K-I-L.
Right. Yeah, or should be K-I-L-L, but then it's no longer a T-R, T-L-R.
T-L-A, yeah.
No, T-L-A. K-I-R is a tacit admission from Microsoft that occasionally an update might break one or more of the many Windows configurations out there. This particular regression can be quietly rolled back without hitting other critical updates.
Please note, said Microsoft, that it might take up to 24 hours for the resolution to propagate automatically to consumer devices and non-managed business devices. Restarting your Windows device might help the resolution apply to your device faster. So basically turn it off and on again.
Yeah.
So how's your start menu? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. It's you know, we laugh, but Steve and I can laugh because we don't use Windows. Dave is weaning himself from Windows so he can laugh. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people out there who just are stuck.
Well, like I say, I have put it on one machine and I even had my wife look at it. And she goes, yeah. So, you know, it's like for her, you know, because she just does, you know, the basic stuff, like right. I said, and photo editing. So I just got to find one of the programs that
there
she can
dozens.
Sit there and manipulate. Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the problem I got. There's so many of them out there. Just to do the simple thing is because, you know, she found one that she likes with the windows, she can crop and adjust the lighting and everything else to do work with the headstones.
Right.
And it's like, okay, we'll work on that and boom, move her right on over to Xubuntu, get her all set up and she's good to go because she does Yahoo Mail. She's still with Yahoo. Even though I got her with
Yahoo.
Yeah,
right.
Even though, she, you know, I still got her with Chrome, but she, browsing and email and then her photos.
There's one called Photox, F-O-T-O-X-X.
Photox. I'll have to check that.
Yeah. Which is a digital photo enhancer. So you can reduce fog, change the brightness levels, intensify colors.
F-O-T-X-X?
F-O-T-O-X-X. There you go.
Thank you.
Certainly. And certainly, like I said, it's free. It certainly doesn't hurt to try it.
I don't know about that. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, whether I can swing that, you know?
Well, check your finances.
Yeah.
Talk to your wife.
I mean, well, but like we were kidding aside, though, that's the problem that is out there is there are so many programs, literally thousands.
Right.
There's almost, I would say...
32,000.
I was going to say close to...
768.
Oh, right. Well, if you're talking about all the files, yes.
Yeah. I was going to say close to 100,000 different programs
right.
to do various things out there from right. soup to nuts.
And that's just what comes in your distro. There are also a million other programs that you can download from other places.
Yeah, you could. If it's not listed there, you just do a search and it goes off. Boom, comes back, gives you the install, the tar to do it. and away you go.
And installation instructions are like 3 lines. You're done.
Yeah. Not hard.
It's pretty simple. Anyway, we should go to the phones. Poor Jim from Irondequoit has been holding patiently. Hi, Jim. What's up?
Well, I have a question. I don't know how to transfer a large file via the internet, email. And when I try to look for help, they talk about the cloud and the Dropbox and all this stuff. And most of that stuff, as I have to admit, is beyond my knowledge base.
Yeah, the short answer is you can't send a large file through email. They're limited to about 5 megabytes. So you have to use a third-party web service.
So do you have one of those things that you're just talking about?
Well, Dropbox does have a free version.
Google Drive also has a free version.
Google Drive has a free version.
Apple iCloud, Microsoft iCloud. OneDrive. If you have any of the cloud drive services, then they have a free sharing option built in.
That's the point. I don't know anything about the cloud and the Dropbox. So
all right, so
am I stuck?
No, Dropbox is easy.
Hang on a second. What's your email address? Do you have a Gmail account or a Hotmail account?
Yeah, I have a Gmail.
Then you have a Google Drive already, free as part of your Google account. What you can do is instead of going to gmail.com, you can go to drive.google.com. Or when you're on Gmail, there's that little rectangle of squares. You can go into your Google Drive. And you can make a public folder, or you can make a link to a file. So you can upload a file to your Google Drive, and then send a link to that file to somebody else.
And they can download it.
And that's called sharing a file. We will post instructions on how to do that. But you're already using the cloud. You're using Google's cloud with your Gmail address.
Okay. I'll give it a try. Like I said, I use the computer probably 8 hours a day to do things. But when I get a problem like this comes up, something simple, I'm a miserable failure.
Well, that's only because you haven't figured out how to do it, and we can help you do that. Steve has posted a link on our website at soundbites.org. On how to handle that. If you scroll down a ways, you'll see. He hasn't posted it yet, but he will in a moment.
What's going on? I'm finding one from the Google Drive app, and then I'm looking for one from the website.
Right. So he'll post that in a couple of minutes. Scroll down; it'll probably be the third thing on the page. The top two are you don't have enough backups in the Soundbites Lounge, but then the third one would be. Would be the link you're looking for in just a minute or two.
Okie doke. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck. Have fun.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's one of the beauties of the internet is that everybody's can be connected to it. One of the problems is how do you manage that? And Google, he's got Google, so I'll talk specifically to that for a moment. Google tries to make it pretty easy. You can... When you go to your Google Drive, it's right in your browser, and then you can drag and drop a file right onto it, and then you highlight that file by clicking on it, and then there's a little share button in the upper right, I believe.
Or you can right-click on the file as well.
Right, and select share from the drop-down menu. And then you have multiple choices, one of which is a link. So you can take that link, and you can either... share it by putting somebody's email address in there, or you can copy the link and send it to that person and say you can get the file by clicking on this link. And then once they've got the file, you can then erase it from your Google Drive. So it's not shared to anybody else anyway, but even so, nobody else can get their hands on it. So it's a pretty easy thing to do once you understand it. As we say, once you know the trick, it's easy, right? But you have to know the trick.
Apple has a system using iCloud so that you can use the Apple Mail app and it will send large files through iCloud up to 25 gigs. Right. And the person at the other end automatically gets a link. I am trying to find if Google has a file size limit like that too, because they may automatically attach to your Google Drive.
That would be nice, actually. Yeah. And then once the person downloads it, you can delete it again.
Yep.
All right, while Steve looks for that, we'll go back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Yeah, Dave was asking about a simple photo program for his wife. Most of the Linux distributions come with GIMP.
Right.
Which is a pretty basic photo manipulation program. And a lot of them will come with DigiCam, which will help you to catalog your photos. And if she's taking RAW photos instead of JPEG, there's a program called Darktable, which is a combination of Photoshop and Lightroom.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No, her stuff is all JPEG.
Well, then GIMP would do it fine for her, and if she wants to organize it, DigiCam will organize and also do some of that basic editing.
Okay, cool. Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, right. It depends on what it is you're doing with it as to which of those programs work.
Well, from what he was talking about, either GIMP or DigiCam would work.
Right, exactly right.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. I'll check both of those out, and like I say, I can throw them on the system and then let her look at it and play around, because that's the beauty of having it up on the Raspberry Pi 400. I can put it on there and play around with it, and if it gets mucked up, no big deal. I just
wipe it out.
It's wipe easy. It out and start again.
GIMP is usually native to any of the Linux distros.
Yeah, right. Yep.
I have to say, GIMP is a little more than basic.
Well, then you go to DigiCam.
Yeah.
But if she knows, if she just wants to do cropping and, you know, lightening and darkening, GIMP will do it for her.
GIMP will do it. DigiCam will do it. Photox will do it. Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of programs that will handle it. And really, that's the beauty of Linux. You find the one that matches the way you work.
Yeah. Because that's basically what she's doing. She's taking these headstones, you know, because she's standing back a little bit.
Right.
And then she'll crop, you know, zoom in, crop them down, cut out the background, stuff and that, and kind of lighten them up and position them and that. And then, boom. And then from there, she posts them on up to Find a Grave.
You know, and then the easy way to learn is go to YouTube and plug in GIMP. You've got thousands of tutorials.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
All right, thanks a lot.
No, thank you.
Bill. Good point.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, I use GIMP for dang near everything, but I don't think of it as a basic program because it has so many features.
It's more closely aligned with Photoshop with the amount of features it has. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did find that Google has a 25 megabyte attachment limit. And if you upload something bigger than that, it automatically makes a Google Drive link for you.
Oh, very nice. That's very nice. I did not know that. I like it.
So if you use the Gmail website, it can automatically do that. If you're using a mail app like Thunderbird or Apple Mail, it won't do that.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hi, fellas. How are you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm in the peach myself.
There you go.
I want to order the rest of the summer today.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, what is it beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, I shouldn't be too proud of that because we got a lot of friends and family that are hurting in other places in the country. So,
Weather.
Anyways, my question pertains to your Chrome OS Flex.
Yes.
I get to thinking that it's dangerous. The Chromium, Chrome.
Yeah.
The operating system basically allows you, an individual, 6 years before you no longer are supported.
Right.
How does that work in the Chrome OS Flex?
We don't know yet. Well, I say we don't know yet. I haven't looked this week at all, so. They could have put out something about it that I don't know about yet. But basically, you get the same kind of look. Here's the deal for everybody else. Here's the deal with Chrome OS on real Chromebooks. You get between 6 and 8 years of updates, and then it's no longer going to be updated. It doesn't stop working. It just no longer gets new features. And I guess I get it. You know, six to eight years is a decent amount of time. So that makes a kind of a sense to me. Chrome OS Flex is also from Microsoft now. From Google. I was just looking something up and the word Microsoft was right there in front of me. It's also from Google, and it is likely that it is going to have a similar thing. But look, you're already putting it on, generally speaking, older machines to begin with. So then you get another 6 years of updates, and you've got a 15 or 20 year old computer. I'm sorry, but I can't get horribly excited about a 20 year old computer that stops working.
Mm-hmm. You know? I understand. Yeah, no, I understand. I just it seems. The complete reversal of what we're talking about when you talk about a Chrome machine versus this new add-on that used to be what? Neverware?
Used to be Neverware. Product was called Cloud Ready. Company was Neverware.
So I had to ask only because it seems kind of odd to me that, I know you're a special type of, you have an association with Google. I forget your abbreviations for, you're like a specialty person that can give advice and whatnot. I don't remember what you called it.
But, doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Well, the only reason I say that to you in that manner is because if I had a wish list for friends who do have Chrome, you know, they would like to be approached by Google, and rather than just saying, here, just shut it off and throw it away. Oh, well, by the way, the landfills don't want it. And what am I supposed to do with it anyway? They say to me, why don't they at least offer me an opportunity to say, look, we can't support you past this point monetarily, which is their assumption. But if you're willing to spend, you know, a small amount of money per year, we'll be glad to extend the extension. Each year.
Microsoft does that, and it's not a small amount of money, and it's a large amount of money each month.
A very large amount of money.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I know that's Microsoft, and we're talking apples and oranges here, but still in all, I guess I just don't get it. I mean, I understand this Chrome OS Flex for older machines, but I guess you can't install that on the old Chromebook that just expired, not getting updates.
Yeah, you cannot.
Currently, it's designed for Windows and Macs up to 13 years old to give them 6 to 8 years more life out of them. But a 13 year old computer is already on its last legs
because most of the software is any of the current software is going to be for the most part totally unusable. As far as, speed and just getting things done, because it is so old.
Yeah, what Google is basically saying is, look, you've got a machine that has been abandoned by Microsoft and Apple, and we can give you another 6.5 years of life in it.
And it's
only- and then to complain that they're not giving you 10 years of life, I'm sorry, I can't. Yeah, I really can't get behind that.
But the thing that is, though, even though with those Flex Chrome, it's still doing basic stuff. I mean, it's not doing, high performance, Architect or color rendering or, math and that type of stuff, like, a full-blown desktop computer. It's for surfing the web and doing stuff like that, your email and simple stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it. I just...
And it is possible to install Chrome OS Flex on an old Chromebook. It just takes a few more steps.
Yeah, it's not impossible. It's doable. It's not, you're going to get another, 6 years, whatever, out of it. But it's, again, it's unsupported. Doesn't mean you can't use it. It's just you can't call Google for help.
Yeah, and, it's an old, slower machine.
Most of the time, you can't call Google for help anyway. You can't call Microsoft for help anyway. That's
right.
That's why we're here.
Right.
All the independent service providers handle those things so that the large companies don't have to.
Oh, geez, why call them for help when you got the three amigos?
Yeah. That's exactly right. Now you're talking.
That's it. So there's a six-year window with this complex. Oh, that's
I don't know that. I'm just assuming it's the same 6 years. I've been looking to find it, and so far they talk about when Chromebooks expire, but they haven't talked about when Chrome OS Flex will expire.
It may be because it's still... It's not even a beta, isn't it? It's a preview?
No, I think it just went into beta.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It works very much like Linux does now. You know, my one version of Linux lasts for 2 years, and then you update it, and you get another version of Linux for 2 years, or an update to that version for 2 years. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's very much what they're going to do with Chrome OS Flex. You can update to the next version, but there's going to come a point where the hardware just doesn't take it anymore. And there's nothing anybody's going to be able to do about that.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes complete sense. I'm as usual, I called the right people to ask this question.
There you go. Thanks.
And one last question. And this is kind of loaded. As you said in the past, you know, HTML was never designed to be used for what it is, and they keep massaging it to make it safe, but safe is literally an oxymoron because there is no such thing as safe. It's just until somebody else figures out a way around safe. I know Steve has mentioned some people. A fellow's last name starts with a G.
Look, we have to... Can you stay on the line? You spent a lot of time prepping your question and not asking it. We have to take a break. Stay on the line and we'll get to you when we come back. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. The entire first hour of this show is now behind us. But look ahead, people. Look ahead. There's a whole another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. An entire another hour of sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. This is going to be a slightly longer break, so you have time to take a bio break, get the beverage of your choice, and then come on back, sit down, get comfortable. Even in Gallatin, Tennessee, there's got to be comfort there somewhere. And then we'll be back to give you a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Ken on the line. Okay, Ken, so what's the question?
Well, the question is, Steve had alluded to a fellow by the name of Steve Gibson in the past. And there was something about a new protocol that he had created, but you didn't really go into any depth. And that pertains to my question. Is there any hope? Is there any possibility that we could potentially see someday a more secure, more elaborate, more beneficial form of what we're utilizing now that perhaps may not only supersede HTML and HTMS, HTMLS, what is it, secure, HTML.
HTTPS.
HTTPS, yeah. I always mix them up. Is it possible, you think, sometime?
Sure. They're making changes all the time. Google has a new protocol that they're working on. Microsoft has a protocol they're working on. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a standard, as Steve says.
Yeah, it's one of the things about standards is there's so many of them to choose from. And each different thing has their own standards. So there's web standards, there's mail standards, there's file standards, there's login standards, there's encryption standards. What a lot of the industry is trying to do now is simplify login to eliminate passwords. Because so many companies get breached and your passwords are lost that you have to keep making up new passwords all the time. And you're not supposed to use, well, you shouldn't use the same password on multiple sites, because when that site gets breached, the bad guys know your password and will try all the other sites. People think they need to remember their passwords easily, so they make them too easy for the bad guys to guess. And so they're trying to eliminate passwords. So Steve Gibson at Gibson Research Corporation, GRC.com, came up with a system he calls Squirrel, a secure, quick, reliable login that uses QR codes on your phone to log into websites to prove your identity instead of using a username and password. The FIDO Alliance is a group of companies, including Microsoft, Google, and Apple, that are working on something similar, and they're coming up with the same answer that Steve already did, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
but hey, they're a big company. He's just one guy. So that moving forward, it will be more safer to log in places, especially when you're logging in to buy things, so there's money on your account. Without needing a secret for the other end to keep, and the other end always loses. So we're working for something like that. The problem is there's always what's called a downgrade attack, that if you try to log in to a website with the new service, a bad guy can intercept the traffic, claim this site doesn't support that service, and it goes back to the old way, which can be broken into. And so we're running into that with mail. There are several ways to encrypt mail between you and the other end. But all it takes is one mail server along the way to say, I don't support that protocol, and it goes back to plain text. So each company encrypts it themselves. So your Google mail is encrypted between you and Google, and then it's decrypted to go on the rest of the internet. And
unless they're also in Gmail.
Unless they're also in Gmail, right. Same thing with Apple, Microsoft, Yahoo. It's crossing the mail provider boundaries that we are working on different security protocols. And so far, the problem is these downgrade attacks. You have to get every mail server in the world, millions and millions of them, to upgrade to this new service, or people will stop getting their mail because their mail server is too old. Right. We're already seeing that with Google. Google and AOL. And Yahoo, AOL and Yahoo are kind of the same company now. They have started their less secure apps that if you're running an old mail program that doesn't support the latest security, they are turning off support for less secure apps. So now you have to either upgrade your mail program to something new enough to have the better security, or you have to create an application-specific password for each application on each computer that you want to connect. And it's a pain for the user. But that's kind of the side effect of sticking with, you know, Windows 7. You can't log into Google anymore without upgrading to a better program. That's the problem. The newer OSs and the newer programs have better security. Too many people haven't upgraded.
This goes back to the question of, is Chrome OS Flex going to be updated forever? There comes a point where the protocols change so much that we just can't support the old thing anymore if you want to stay secure. So, for example, right now, I can send totally encrypted email from my computer to Dave and my computer to Steve, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is we all have to be using Thunderbird. We all have to create private and public passwords, and then we all have to exchange those public passwords.
In person, usually.
Mm-hmm. Which is not that hard for us. We can do it on a Saturday.
Well, Steve Gibson has said, naked, in the middle of a giant field with nobody around, covering your heads with a sheet so no one can read your lips.
Right, exactly. And then once we've done that, I can say, okay, I want to send this to Dave, and I want it to be encrypted. But look at all the work that went into that. Most people don't want to have to do that.
Yeah.
Most people don't know how to do that. And so the question is, how do we make it secure and easy? And that's the thing that's taking so long.
I think the word to sum it up is seamless.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Seamless and simplified. Seamless. If you have to jump through hoops, no one's going to do it.
All right, so I have a thought. It just, I don't want to keep you in line because you've got lots of other oodles of friends that are going to call in and whatnot, our friends, all of us who are in the family.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping that we can get to a point to where some entity, I won't draw any lines, somebody comes up with something new that's so new, it's like the creation back in 69 or whenever it was that actually took place.
Right.
Which was by accident, you guys keep mentioning, which scares the hell out of me. They actually intentionally say, look, this new procedural thing, almost like a regulation for the internet, what are the governing bodies or whatever that define, the HTML and what goes into it, that says, look, we've got this thing. You don't have to do all that stuff, Nick, that you just said. It's like, bam, it's seamless. You want to go here, you want to go there, it's encrypted.
Right, that's the thing. They're working on that, Ken, but the problem is getting all those different companies to say their stuff is better than mine or at least as good, and we need to come to an agreement.
And that's why the FIDO Alliance is a good step,
right?
Because it's a bunch of the major companies getting together to try to agree on something.
Right. So we're working toward it. It just isn't here yet.
Okay, well, I appreciate all your help, and please, before you get off the air, if you can, for me personally, you talked a lot about what was going on behind the scenes with the Soundbites website.
Yeah.
But I've yet to hear you say the punchline, like what took place and how you resolved it and all that. I mean, it was obviously a security issue.
Yes, it was. What happened was this, so everybody knows. I have multiple sites on my server.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is my daughter's WordPress site. Hers, she hasn't used it in years.
So she hasn't updated it.
She hasn't updated it, and it was in her hands to do, and it got hacked. So what I did was I took it down, and everything else got faster.
Wow.
And everything else is fixed. She still owns the domain, and will continue to do so. We have to figure out what we're going to put in its place right now. But in place of the WordPress. But, you know, she started it when she was, I bought it when she was born, but she really started using it when she was 18, 19, and her password just apparently wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then she kind of abandoned it, and it sat there unupdated, and somebody broke in.
And life gets in the way.
And a lot of times it isn't WordPress itself, it's one of the plugins you
Right.
learn.
And so, at any rate, the point is, when I took down her site and erased all the files, everything sped up magnificently, and it seems to be fine now.
Well, I'm glad you had a good Saturday.
Thank
you.
Yeah, it took me about 10 minutes to remove her website, but then it took me 3 days to check all my other files on all my other websites to make sure they hadn't been sidetracked.
Cross-site scripting vulnerabilities.
But thank you.
At least you didn't have to rebuild everything.
Exactly.
So have a splendid day, and I look forward to hearing to you in the future. And, just have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Ken.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Once I realized that, A, she wasn't really using her site. I mean, it's her site. I wasn't in her way. She's an adult, and she can do what she wants with the site. And what she was doing with her site was nothing. So,
created May 2nd, 2000, according to Whois.
Oh, yeah.
So I
didn't get it when she was born. I got it when she was 18.
I understand the security of obscuring Whois values, but I'm annoyed by obscuring Whois values when you're trying to solve a problem.
He's exactly right. Exactly right. All right, back to the phone. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Yeah, I was just on a minute ago talking about Dave's problem, but one thing I forgot to say. The other thing that he's going to have to do is she's going to have to import her photos into Linux. And there is a very nice app for doing that. It's called Rapid Photo Downloader. When you plug in your card, it'll find your card. You click on it to download it. It'll download it and put it in a folder by year, month, and date. And it will not download doubles in case they're already in there.
Super. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Bill.
All right. Bye.
Yep. That's if depending on what kind of device you've got them on. If they're on like Google Photos, then you can just download them. You don't have to do anything else to them. But yeah, Rapid Photo Downloader is a good one.
If you use a real camera, well, no. See, I keep getting criticized by that because I use a real camera with an SD card. It's a digital camera. It's not a real camera with film.
Right. It's not a real camera.
Yeah.
Well, you know what they say, the best camera is the one you've got with you, yep. and everybody these days is carrying at least one camera in their phone.
Yeah. The YouTube channel Smarter Every Day got a unprecedented tour of Kodak and how they make film from, you know, like a truckload of plastic pellets coming in one end and film going out the other end. He finally updated part two 6 months later.
Yeah.
And he went to one of the very few.
So he was on Kodak time.
Yeah. he uploaded part two of three. So we're waiting for part three. That will he went to one of the only companies left in the country that it still develops film.
Right.
And they buy these film developers used, being decommissioned. Usually, he said, usually from some big conglomerate in Europe that's getting out of the film business, and so they can refurbish them and still get it. Finding the chemicals is tricky, so they sometimes have to go to chemical suppliers to, and then make their own developer fluid.
Yeah, that was one building that I did work at Kodak, mm-hmm. that could only claim their claim to fame within this building. It was called PNS, Powder and Solution. The raw product came in, but when it left, it was a sellable product.
Yep.
And it was all the chemicals needed to develop the film. So raw came in and boom, pallets went out. There was people there putting together the old tri-packs, but we had all the chemicals that you needed to develop any kind of film, whether it was movie film or down to your home studio and using Dektal right. for black and white.
I used to develop my own film. I had a little dark room and enlarger. Getting those chemicals was ludicrously easy back mm-hmm. in the day.
Yeah.
It was hard not to find them available.
I worked at Kodak a couple of summers in college, and one summer I was on the production line packing film. So I would get that we were on the professional film line, so I'd get these big rolls of film. I'd put them in the lightproof bag, put them in the box, and put the box on the pallet.
Nice.
Pick up the next one, put it in the bag, put the bag in a box, and put it on the pallet.
Yep.
Pick up the next one.
For 8 hours.
For 8 hours, yeah.
When you worked at Kodak,
in the dark.
it cost you a whole, I think it was $2 for the year. You could belong to the camera club.
Yep.
And you had full use of their photo labs. And there's all the black and white paper you wanted to use. You only had to pay for the chemicals, which like was 25 cents. But all the facilities were there for the developing and printing of all your photos.
Yep.
Yeah, my dad got to bring home a lot of the...
And you could rent cameras, too.
Yeah, my dad worked for Kodak for 40 years, and he got to bring home a lot of the experimental cameras in pre-production.
Nice.
So we tested some of the first instant cameras that came out before they were available to the public, and... The camera was free, the film was free, the processing was free. They just wanted to look at the photos and run their experiments on them before they give them back to us.
Right.
Sure, fine.
Yeah, fine. We're not taking pictures you can't look at.
So now when my folks moved out of their condo, my sister and I had to go through all of those slides.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question. I recently had my Wi-Fi modem by Spectrum replaced. It was bad. I set it up and went back into the Spectrum app, called Spectrum in some place on the planet, and they got my new modem on the line and everything. But what I decided to do is plug my iMac directly into the Ethernet and then let the Wi-Fi run everything else in the house. And, of course, there's the Xbox games, there's a TV for picking up Sling, and there's the phones and all of this stuff. What I found is yesterday when I got all of this done, Wi-Fi was dropping out every now and then. And so I'm curious as to whether or not having the iMac plugged directly into the Ethernet modem is somehow interfering with the Wi-Fi modem.
It shouldn't, unless you have Wi-Fi hotspot turned on the computer, which is not something you typically have on by default.
I don't have that. No, I don't have that turned on.
Yeah, it shouldn't do that. When the Wi-Fi drops out, does the iMac that's wired in still work?
Because
that would tell you whether it's the Wi-Fi dropping out or the internet dropping out.
The iMac did drop out, but I wasn't savvy enough at the moment to check to see if Wi-Fi had dropped out.
Right.
That's something I'm going to have to do.
You're going to have to do some detective work, keep track of times and stuff like that.
And do you have two boxes, one for internet, one for Wi-Fi?
Well, with the Time Warner setup, you have two boxes.
Yes.
The one where Ethernet goes in.
It was better when they had one box.
Yeah, I did have that, but now I got two.
Yeah.
And so the other four connectors coming out will allow you to connect directly with Ethernet while it still supports the Wi-Fi.
Right, but then it does add a step to your troubleshooting to know which box is the one that's having trouble.
Right. Yeah, but you've got some detective work to do. You've got some records to keep. But do that fairly diligently, and you should come to a realization shortly.
Okay, because my grandson was using Wi-Fi, and when it went out, he was instantly in the room.
Yeah.
Because I think he was on a game or something. So, all right, well, let me start there. And I'll see what shakes out of this.
Perfect. Thanks, Larry.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck. Bye-bye. Yeah, we had a small Surus in our home this week. It appears that the Roku box on my wife's television, so it's an emergency, is losing the Wi-Fi connection. Everything else stays connected. I look at the app on my phone and the signal is great and the computers are all connected. My phone is connected. So it is clearly that Roku box, that little Roku stick.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a new Roku stick and tomorrow we'll put it in.
Yep.
And I'll be a hero. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to do that.
That's one of the problems with, especially the ones that literally are just a stick.
Yep.
They probably are using lower quality components.
Probably.
I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah.
and they're pretty cheap. So, they burn out after a year. You buy a new one. It's unfortunate.
That's exactly right.
And unfortunately, we're in a disposable society like that. So the recycling companies in town are having a bang up business. I just ran into this the other day. So e-waste, they're one of the big recycling companies in town. They used to charge, they still do, charge $10 for a CRT, but other electronics were free recycling. They've now started charging $5 for an LCD.
Of course they have.
Well, yeah, because you can go up and down the streets and see people throwing out these big paneled TVs. Is, oh, it broke. Oh, and they just go back to, some other store and pick up, 50-inch for a few hundred bucks.
Someone will pick it up and take it and try to recycle it themselves or pull parts out. Didn't you say you had one guy tore something apart in your driveway?
We put it out on the curb. The guy tore it apart, left the pieces all over the driveway, and took one component out.
Yeah. Jerk.
Yeah, take the whole thing or nothing.
Yeah, you know.
So check with your e-waste. I can post the ink. E-waste and what's the other one is Recycle King, something like that.
Well, there's Sun King.
Sun King, that's it. Yeah, and e-waste. They're probably two of the biggest ones in town. But many times, your local community center or town hall or your garbage company will have free electronic recycling days. that you can take your electronics to get recycled, rather than just trying to stick them out in the curb and hope they go to the right place. Yeah. Or worse, putting them in the garbage, which
you go into a landfill.
Yeah, you don't realize how much hazardous material is in electronics. All the heavy metals. Maybe not too ironic, but we used to ship a lot of our trash over to China,
right?
And they have stopped taking it because they're having a high incidence of health problems from kids that wander through these electronics piles looking for scrap metal to sell, getting hurt by all of the heavy metals that make up our electronics.
Yeah, especially with the batteries and everything else, you know, and the possible leakage of those and just the components. Yeah.
Lead, mercury, cadmium, arsenic.
I mean, now, all those capacitors and everything else, if they start popping and busting, you know, those are acids in there.
Right. Maven Technologies didn't used to charge anything. For recycling.
Jeff, what's his name? Microworks.
Microworks.
Yeah. A lot of those computer stores will take recycling.
Jeff
at Microworks. Yeah. They also do recycling. So he's at Monroe and Westfall behind the Arby's.
Right.
I know every fast food restaurant from driving around town. and a lot of times they are drop off points for the big companies.
Right.
Which are nice too.
Right, but I don't believe I don't know about Microworks, but I do know that Maven, at least the last time I dropped a bunch of stuff off,
Microworks
didn't charge anything.
Doesn't charge either.
Good for you, Jeff.
I sometimes run into issues with swollen batteries. They'll take lithium batteries, but not if they're swollen.
Right, and that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, that's that.
Yeah, Batteries Plus on Jefferson Road will take used batteries in unless they're swollen.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Just on circuit boards and all that, you could have capacitors and all those other components in there that have gotten heated up. And because you'll see on the top of them, usually there's like a little K or an X, and those will pop. And then you got all that acid and fluid, and, you know, that's not good. You know, and that's a health hazard.
Right.
Throw that into the landfill, and then you wonder why the land and everything else gets contaminated.
Yeah, right. Apple has a program for their own devices, and a lot of the major PC makers do too, where you can return your Apple device to Apple, and they have a robot, there's Liam and Daisy, who take it apart and recycle all the pieces in it. And Apple makes a big point out of when their new products on how much recycled stuff goes back into making the new product again.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you. So give us a call. We've got a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's Soundbites right here on the great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Jim from Brighton, New York, right here on the line. What's up, Jim?
Hi,
Jim, turn your radio down, please. Turn your radio down, please.
Hi, just a second. Let me get my computer turned off here.
Turn your radio down.
Okay, how's that?
Better.
Yeah, there you go. What's up?
Okay. Steve just mentioned a store called Batteries Plus on Jefferson. And it's been closed for about a year now. I don't think there's another one in our area.
That must be the last time I tried to take batteries back, and they wouldn't because they were swollen.
Yeah, right.
Sorry about that.
Well, I don't know why they closed. It's too bad because it was the only one around.
Right.
The other question I had was when the Chrome OS system, you know, one that picks up on an old computer, has passed its 2-year mark, is all of your data in the cloud so that if you wanted to update with a new version, you could just bring your data back from the cloud?
Yeah, that's the beauty of that. All of your, unless you specifically save something on your computer, on your Chromebook, say, unless you specifically do that, it all lives in the cloud anyway. So, and by the way, okay, two things. First, your old Chromebook doesn't stop working. It just stops getting updates. So you can still use it. I've got the original Chromebook that still works, the original CR48 reference model. It still works. It doesn't get updates, but it still works.
Yeah, same
so,
here.
Yeah, you can use old ones. But, for example, one of the things that I did a while ago, I bought a new Chromebook. I turned it on. It asked me for my username and password. I put it in. 2 minutes later, all my apps were there. All my data was still available in the cloud on this new Chromebook. It remembers how you set up your old Chromebook and sets up the new one exactly the same way.
Well, that is... Well, you know, I was thinking... Eventually, there's not going to be as many of these Windows machines around anymore as people switch over. Right now, you can buy a refurbished Windows machine pretty cheap with a fair amount of memory in them. And you could take one of these and turn it into a Chromebook. It would be a fairly modern piece of machinery.
Yep.
And it would seem like it would have a pretty good lifetime.
Yeah, I was looking at... I have a tab on my browser for deals and, you know, not just Banggood and AliExpress and all of those, but, Amazon has a warehouse page and like that. And then of course, Woot has sales every day.
$9.99 for a Kindle.
Right.
$9.99.
Yes. $9.99. But I was looking at their refurbished laptops. And they had laptops for like $150. And I actually looked at it and thought, there's something that Chrome OS Flex would be great on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need another computer right at the moment. But if I did, that's the place I'd look, and that's the operating system I'd put on it. Because
it's, one of those machines work for a kid in college?
Yes and no. Okay? It depends on what it is they do in college.
Middle school. Okay. Middle school, probably. High school, probably.
Yeah. Middle school, yeah. Up to high school.
But in college, so for example, what we have is when I was teaching at RIT, a lot of the students had fairly high-end desktops in their rooms to do, well, honestly, to play games on, but also to do their big work on. But they would take a Chromebook to class.
Take
notes. Because they could take all their notes on that. They could do all of the, you know, web browsing and when they're writing papers and things like that. I mean, I wrote my master's thesis in Google Docs. It worked great. It was fine. You can do that sort of thing quite easily. And then when they go back to their desk, they don't even have to transfer anything because it's out on the web and they can pull it down right from the web or use it up there.
Or it's up there in the cloud for a document or anything else on class notes.
Right. So lots of people are taking Chromebooks to college. Whether it's the only computer they have, that's a separate issue. If you're an English major or a history major, you know, that's one thing. But if you're an
engineer
major or you know, you're doing engineering programs and stuff like that, then maybe you need a bigger, faster machine. But even so, like I said, a lot of the students are still, they have two computers. One is the high-end machine in their dorm, and then the other one is a Chromebook for carrying around every day. And the beauty of that is you lose the Chromebook or it breaks. All you have to do is buy a new one and use the same username and password, and all your programs, your apps, and all your data are available to you all over again. Not a problem.
Amazing. You know, I just can't believe how long this OS has been around, and I just never heard about it.
Yeah, the Chrome OS, of course, has been around for quite a while. The Cloud Ready program from Neverware has been around for a few years, and then Google took it over and renamed it Chrome OS Flex, and now they're making it pretty much on a par with the Chrome OS itself. So as things move along, they're getting closer every day, Chrome OS and Chrome OS Flex will essentially be the same program.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. So yeah, I've thought about that too. When you take a when you see these sales, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. okay, it's a refurbished laptop. Okay, most of my computers are refurbished and they run great and have for years. So you buy a refurbished laptop for $150 or $200. Let's say you buy a real high-end one for $300. You can put Ubuntu on one of those, but for the $150 and $200 ones, you throw Chrome OS Flex on it, you've got a nice, inexpensive Chromebook that will last you for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. We do try to recommend against refurbished computers to, I want to say, like regular people. If
right,
you
right.
have a little bit of troubleshooting knowledge right. in you, you know how to tinker, you know how to load drivers, that's probably fine.
Yeah.
But for someone who just wants to turn it on and have it work reliably every day.
Yeah, it's not computer savvy.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. The question is always, why was it refurbished?
Right.
Somebody bought it, didn't like it, and returned it. That's great.
Yes.
Somebody bought it, had a lot of trouble with it, returned it, it got fixed, maybe. And sold again.
Right.
That's not so great.
Yeah. Well, that's where you look at the some of those places, like Amazon has yeah. a rank.
Yeah.
You know, and the class top a, rank is exactly B. what you said. Somebody bought it, decided they didn't want it, returned it. It's yeah. in the box. It
didn't
got
fit their needs.
And you can go all the way down to it's banged up a little and pieces are missing.
Yeah.
You know, like no power cord.
I've
or
heard
whatever.
Of people using Amazon as a 14-day rental.
Yes.
I'll get three of them, see which one I like, and just return the other two.
Yes, people do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And those are viable products to buy.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense.
And then they wind up going into the warehouse.
Well, right. But, yeah, so...
Because they can't sell it as new.
Right. But mostly stuff like Chrome OS Flex right now, at least, is really targeted at older machines. So you've got an old machine... It runs Windows 7, or it runs, you know, Windows 8, or even 10, but not well. And it's just sitting in a closet. Drag it out. Throw Chrome OS Flex on it. Make it useful again. You know, everybody needs a second computer in the living room to look up IMDb.
Yeah, while you're watching that. Who was that?
Or like I said, try putting Xubuntu on it, because if you're a Windows right. lover... And you want to slowly get away from Windows, because you're going to want it down the road. Play with it now and learn it now to where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Windows just doesn't work for you and everything else. And now you're forced to, whether you want to or not, learn another operating system.
Right.
Just to get a little practice under your belt, it's the best way to do it because, oh, well, if you mess it up, you just start over again. It's an old machine that's sitting on the side and you're playing with it. It's not your everyday machine.
Right. Right. So for many people, their everyday driver is still working, but that second machine that's been sitting in a closet, if you can throw, it's got enough RAM and stuff, you can throw Xubuntu on it. You don't want to be bothered learning a new thing, throw Chrome OS Flex yeah. on it, and you're on your way. And that works with PCs and with old Macs and Intel.
Yeah, well, the reason yeah. I say do it, trying the Xubuntu is because if you do have other programs that you run on it that don't run on, say, the Chrome, you know, you
right,
can
right,
go
right,
either
right,
way,
right.
either way, and it's, you're going to be set. Cover
right.
your, do some forth, you know, looking ahead, planning, and getting yourself in position so you're not all of a sudden in panic mode. Oh, I got to do this or do that, and my machine just went south
right.
on me.
So, yes, and this is an important thing to remember, and we've talked about this before. If you're the sort of person who spends all their time doing web-related stuff, going to websites, doing web-based email, Googling, YouTube, Netflix on your computer, that sort of fare, then Chrome OS will do you just fine. if you have specific programs you need to run or you want to run, like I said, I've written over the years many, many programs that automate stuff for me. They run on Linux, and they most of them nowadays run on Python. So I tend to put Xubuntu on any laptop I get because then I can use it to do all of that stuff. But if I'm giving that laptop, and I do take old laptops, put stuff on them, and give them to people, refugees and stuff. I tend to put Chrome OS Flex on them now because it's easy, it's quick to learn.
User-friendly.
It's user-friendly. You don't have to worry about proper updates and is this going to work, is that going to work. Just you boot it up and it runs every single day.
Well, that's why the school systems have now gone from PCs and Macs to Chrome, because they're easy, just a quick wipe out and start for the next school year or maintenance. They don't, excuse me, like we've said before, the Chromebooks, they don't have to worry about the spyware, the malware, the virus, any virus, you know, getting attacked and everything else. Chromebooks are just rock solid, knock on wood, that, you know, they work for them.
Right.
And they're easy to maintain. The a system op can just sit there and do a blanket, you know, turn them all on and just boom, do a blanket wash and reinstall them. So when the students come in for the next school year, they set up, boom, the fifth graders, curriculum is already loaded there for them and away they go.
Right. And for individuals who don't really need to worry about that, there's the fact that it's just quick and convenient and easy. And again, like I said, unless you're using programs that specifically require some other operating system, whether it's Windows or a Mac or Linux, then a Chromebook will do everything you need to do and do it inexpensively and quickly. Yeah, I mean, why would you mess around with updates that break your machine
again,
again and again and again?
Well, especially also, you know, you can even put the apps that you have on your phone down onto these machines.
Right.
You know, whether, you know, they're games or, you know, apps for doing your calendars or whatever.
I run on my Chromebook, which is a higher end Chromebook because they do all of this at once. I run a bunch of Linux apps like Thunderbird on my Chromebook. I run a bunch of Android apps on my Chromebook and a bunch of Chromebook apps on my Chromebook. And simultaneously, again, now that's a higher end Chromebook and I bought it with 8 gig of RAM and a faster prime, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Specifically because I knew I was going to be wanting to do all of those things.
You had a need.
But the point is, you can get a Chromebook that does all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's easy enough. It's easy enough to do and it's convenient and fast. And up until a while ago, I was using it here at the show and it did everything I needed to do. I changed to this because I felt like a change. That's the literal only reason I changed to my, my Xubuntu laptop. I have an Xubuntu desktop as well. I just felt like I got bored. I wanted to bring something different to the show for a while.
Yeah.
So I did. And I brought, for a couple of weeks, I brought my our Raspberry Pi 400, if you remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks like I was just looking, you know, multi-camera video software. OBS, the one I use, has a version for Chromebook.
Yes.
They say you need a slightly higher level Chromebook to do multi-camera video broadcasting.
Right. And that's the truth. That's the way that works. If you're a plain vanilla user, a cheap, inexpensive, lower end Chromebook works fine. But if you want to do something like OBS, yes, you can do it on a Chromebook. But not on that $150 Chromebook.
Well, that's why we were saying before. That's the whole problem, though, with a lot of the folks. You've got to understand that the price of poker keeps going up.
Yep.
And the software is going to demand more. So, yeah, you know, you might be able to want to run this, say, higher-end software, but you got a lower-end machine. You got to, you know, meet somewhere in the middle because the programs have to keep updating to run faster, better, and demand because of the software demanding more. So, you know, yeah, it's going to be a game of leapfrog and keeping up. So it's going to be hard.
Yeah. Yeah. There really is a plethora, I will say, of options for you out there these days. And if you're going, it's like we've been talking about, was it last week when we were talking about cutting the cord and what is it that you want to watch?
Right. Not just what channel numbers, what shows, what networks.
Right. And similarly, you know, should I get a Chromebook? I don't know. We need to go more in depth now. What do you run on a daily basis? What do you run once a month? What do you almost never run that you could do without, sort of thing? You need to manage those features for yourself, and the only way to do that is with a little due diligence ahead of time. In the meantime, we're going to talk to James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hi, Nick and Dave. I have a 1-year-old Dell G7-17 laptop, very good laptop. Two times over the last month, all of a sudden, the screen went black, and of course I pushed the start button and everything's fine. I know there's a lot of things that could be, but what comes to your top of your mind on something like that where it's just dead black, but otherwise everything else is working fine?
Is the computer turning off or going to sleep?
It's going to sleep.
Yeah.
Try hitting a key other than the power button to see if it'll wake from sleep.
And check your power settings.
Yeah, you may have your power settings set to sleep too soon.
Okay. I don't think that's the case because it's only happened two times in the last year. It was once and then another time over the last 5 weeks.
Could have been brownout.
What's that mean?
Power, dip in the power?
I don't know. Possibly, maybe.
Yeah, sometimes
could
when
that be overheating? No.
It could overheat and shut down if it is powering
but
off.
But the computer would totally shut down, just the screen.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It wasn't the screen turning black. It was the computer turning off.
Could be.
So when you say hitting a key started it, did it start up like it was fresh?
No, I hit the upper right, the normal power on button, and it came back on, and, you know, I punched my code in 1010, and it didn't do a fresh start. It took me back.
Like it woke up?
Where I was.
It was a screensaver lock.
Yeah, well, that's what it sounds like. It's a screensaver lock.
So how do I repair that?
Well, it's not a repair. You can change. You can either completely remove the screensaver timeout, or you can set it to be longer. Now, is this a computer that you take places or that you only use at home?
It's at home, but I turn it on in the morning and I shut it up at night, like 9 o'clock every day.
All right. And which window program are you using?
10.
Okay. Okay, so the settings for the screensaver are in settings, personalization, lock screen, screensaver settings.
So check all that.
Well, you go into there and you can say how long it takes before the screensaver starts. Now, if you do that,
I would just turn it off and then just turn off the monitor when you're away from
it. It's a laptop. There's also a hot corner option you can turn on.
What's that?
If you move your cursor into one of the very corners of the screen, the screen can go to sleep. And maybe that got turned on, and maybe you accidentally moved it into that corner and put the screen to sleep.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll forget about all of that stuff then.
Well, the other thing is it could have been an energy-saving mode, right? If in fact, it kind of went into hibernation, which is what it sounded like it did.
Yeah.
Under start and settings and system and power and battery, you can say when the screen goes into power saving mode. So when the battery gets low enough, it'll shut itself down. Or when you aren't using it for a long enough time, it goes into hibernation, which is what it sounded like happened here. So you should go into that section, start, settings, system, power and battery, and shut down energy saving mode. Turn it off.
All right. I'll check all of that stuff.
Perfect.
Thank you very much for those great recommendations.
Thanks. Have fun.
You too.
Yeah, see, that's the other issue, of course. Which one is it?
Yeah, do your homework.
Yeah, I'm leaning toward the energy saver because of what it sounded like to me, but...
Well, it doesn't happen that often, so that's why I was thinking...
He said
maybe,
it only happened twice.
Yeah, maybe a hot corner.
Could be hot corner.
I'm thinking more of the hot corner because...
Could be the hot corner.
Move it into the lower right corner and it goes to sleep.
Right.
I just have never moved it down there before.
Right. We see one of the beauties of every operating system is there's multiple ways to do everything.
Yeah.
One of the problems with every operating system is there's multiple ways to do everything. And so fixing what could be an issue is always harder than you think it is.
Right. And trying to determine whether it's the screen going blank or the computer going to sleep, or the computer powering off, is kind of the first step to point you in a direction to go. If the computer is actually powering off, then you start looking at the power supply. Is the plug where the power cord plugs into the computer, is that loose? And maybe
at the wall.
Or at the wall, and maybe the battery was just getting low and the plug wasn't in tight yet.
Right. And the easiest way to tell there is when the screen shuts down, as long as it's not a Mac, look at the lights.
I'm so mad they took those status lights off. Although the new Mac Studio has one back.
Which one?
The Mac Studio.
What, no,
the giant Mac Mini. No, it has a status light.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I use the caps lock light as my status light. If the caps lock comes on, the computer's running.
All right. That music signals the fact that you have just wasted 2 hours of your life that you will never get back. Listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You've spent 2 hours with Dave Enright, 2 hours, and I'm so sorry to say this, with Steve Ray, 2 hours with me, Nick Francesco, and 2 hours with each and every one of the rest of you on Soundbite, right here in the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you because with your generous support, we continue to be one of the very, very vanishingly few jazz stations left in the entire world, but it's you people who are keeping us alive, and you have our eternal gratitude. We are done for this week, but we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.